And I know that several of you who listen have done the codependence to interdependence workshop. And I just had an interaction with someone that gave me a whole new look, a whole new picture of this dynamic of codependence. And so I'm going to just shift over to some notes here and sort of lay that power person dynamic out once again and take a look at just another refinement that to me was kind of mind-boggling. Take it all at the next level. So for those who perhaps haven't been familiarized with the workshop Codependence to Interdependence, in that workshop, we introduce the concept of what we call a power person. A power person is the person who, one, had more power over your life than you did at some point. Usually it's a parent, though not always. Two, was not functioning as a human being. That parent was not functioning out of love. And three, the child perceived the circumstance as survival. Those three events happening simultaneously opens the energy field of the person involved wide open to where they simply become a sponge. And again, it's usually a parent and a child, but actually there's one gentleman I worked with back a couple of years ago, and he had been in his 70s. He was in a store that was robbed, and somebody held a gun to his head, and he just, you know, went right into that power person dynamic. So it isn't necessarily a child, but usually it is. And we can have more than one power person. But I had an interaction with someone and had done a significant amount of work with them over a period of several years. And so was pretty well acquainted with what the power person dynamic was. And one of the things that we know is that once this power person dynamic is installed in someone's mind, again, literally, when those three things occur, the energy field of the child or the person involved, just it moves out of all reasoning, all ability to block energy, and it just becomes a sponge and literally sucks in every energy, spoken and not spoken. You know, if the dynamic is one where, let's say, the power person is enraged but doesn't say a word, the child still draws in that energy, and it becomes the foundation of the behavior for the rest of their lives. My offering is, literally, once you understand this power person dynamic and have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what it's about, you'll see that it literally runs the whole world. I don't care whether you're in a business situation, church, government, you know, sports, I don't care where it is, family, community, this dynamic runs the whole world. And it's all part of the false perceptual system of the mind. And because of the survival dynamic involved here, whenever it's resonated into activity, it controls behavior. So a person who has had that dynamic installed in their minds is limited to three behaviors throughout their whole lives. Until that dynamic is resolved, they're limited to three behaviors. And the behavior that they will do will depend on the level of stress that they're under. When there's little or no stress, people will do whatever they did to get along with their power person. We call that their normal persona. When stress starts to build, they'll shift out of doing what they did to get along with their power person, and they'll shift into doing what they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do what their power person did that they hated the most. Runs the world. And the refinement across Ken Clare for me in this interaction, knowing fairly well over a period of years, and from personal code evaluations and such, what the power person dynamic was. I watched this person going under stress over something that was totally and completely a falsity, totally and completely based on a fantasy, and being confronted in that fantasy, up went their stress. Someone is normally a very rational, very intelligent, very well-accomplished person. But once this, the goal for something that, at least as I see it and understand it, is not true, the goal for that to be true, well, it became so strong that it just flipped out into this power person dynamic. And this is someone who has had, over the period of their lives, many, many losses, like major, mega losses from childhood, being stolen from by a parent as a child, or at least what in their mind was stealing. In the business world, having had businesses that were very successful that all of a sudden were just taken away, businesses just lost, like major money type situations. Having a retirement up in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the company folding and loss. And it's just the repeating pattern of the power person based on an early experience with mom emptying his piggy bank became a dynamic of loss. And as I watched this scenario unfold, and this person sent a text to the person they were interacting with that they were out, they were leaving the relationship, and the bottom line of their communication, literally, word for word, was, "You lose." And it was just, for me, a whole different level of insight in watching how people set up energies to come and bite them. And when one thinks they can successfully pull off, it's like the power person becomes a god to them. And so when one thinks they can successfully pull off a power person dynamic and deliver to someone else the blow their power person delivered to them, think they're successful. It's like being able to deliver that blow. You lose. That literally was the dynamic that they had their power person do to them. But the insight that I got, or that I saw, and I just invite everybody to look at it and see how it fits you for you, and if you have any feedback, would love to hear it. But to be able to deliver that blow to someone else, I get to be God. It's like the power person is God, and I get to be God because, look, I get to do the same thing. And it's all based in delivering energetic patterns that are based in hostility or fear. So the non-being mind successfully thinks it has displaced God and has the satisfaction for that moment of being on the throne. Look at this. Look what I was able to do. Never being conscious of the fact that by engaging in that dynamic, they reinforced and created the next round of blame toward whoever in the world is going to come do it to them again. It was like the invitation by being able to deliver that power person message, you know, gotcha, you lose, sets the energy up of calling in someone, maybe someone from next door, maybe someone from the other side of the world, to show up and make sure that they lose again. So the satisfaction of delivering to others what my power person unleashed on me, if I'm in that role, feels like power, but it's really self-destruction. Because only energies delivered through love to self or others will uplift our lives. Everything else leads to disintegration. So it was, for me, a new way of seeing how people recreate, set up the energy fields that draw whatever it is they hate the most right back into their lives. Again, it's the core of why is this happening to me again. So when one has a thought disorder related to a power person, and they're under stress because they've denied, because they've blamed the power person for what's going on inside of them, they've dissociated from the thought disorder that underlies their pain. And we know what happens when I deny, when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, then I have to dissociate from the real cause. As I said to my mind, I'm not allowed to see that anymore. So I now create an unconscious mind. And what will happen in that case is that thought disorder will be put into one's brain's image, one's perceptual construct of somebody else, and somebody else shows up with that thought disorder as something that one perceives belongs to another person, but it's all a projection. Remember, when one denies, dissociate. Dissociate means hide. Somebody, when I hide something, I put energy into it. You know, in order to put it away, I have to push it down. To push it down, I put energy into it. I push that energetic pattern literally, energetically out into the world. And whoever's in the world that resonates with it is going to tend to be drawn to me. And when they do, then they do the behavior that resonates that hidden power person dynamic. And once a power person dynamic, once any thought disorder is resonated, there's one of two things you can do. You can either stay in denial and talk about them as though they're the problem in your life. Look what you've done to me. Look at how much pain I'm in. The only thing that can cause me pain are the energetic patterns within myself. Someone else can't cause that in me, but someone else can resonate that in me. So when I push down the power person thought disorder, the core thought disorder, I send that energy out, I draw somebody in, they do the behavior resonates that part of my mind, I use that data, because it's hidden from me, I unconsciously use that data to formulate my brain's image of them. They show up in my mind with my problem attached. And I will then tend to speak or behave, remember, ultra stress, one does what they did, or one does what the power person did to them that they hated the most. So now this person speaks in what they think is their own voice, but it's really the power person's voice coming through. The message they deliver is exactly the blow that the power person whack them down with in early childhood. But when being spoken, there's this false, I'm the one with the power. See, I get to deliver this blow. I get to be God, and I get to deliver this blow to this other person. But of course, as the worksheet says, I get the original, they get the carbon copy. Who gets the blow first? So the mind in that state is totally false, totally blank. But until we forgive, resolve that power person dynamic in ourselves, and when it's resonated into activity, that's what's going to run our behavior, run our thoughts, run our feelings. So, you know, the bottom line of this particular person's dynamic was, right from a very young boy, kid who worked hard and saved money, and mom came in one day, had a need, and took it. Conclusion was loss, pain. It's repeated all the way up, and this person's, I think, well into their sixth decade, doing it, turning around, and unconsciously delivering that blow of, you lose, to somebody else. So just remembering that everything that comes from perception, up in perception, when we're under stress, when we're talking about how it's somebody else's fault, is all a lie. The other thing I can do in that case is go, oh, I realize there's something very uncomfortable in me moving here. I think I'll move into responsibility communication. That's why our intensive ties together codependence and responsibility communication as a practicum. Because the alternative is I can step into responsibility communication. I speak and own my own thought disorders rather than project them into my brain's image of others and blame somebody else and play the game out once again with somebody else. I get to go, all of this is mine. I get to move through this. And rather than turning it into perception, I get to apply forgiveness to it. So under stress, the message that one hated, but incorporated into perception of others and themselves, they speak of someone else, which unconsciously, if you can be the observer of your own fear and hostility-based states, give you the opportunity to see when you were told, what you were told, and what's not true, and how to own, to speak responsibly about that. And the difference between, you know, in the communication, did you hear what I think I said workshop? We have two forms of communication. We have what we call projection communication. Whatever's moving in me, whatever my mind makes up out of what's moving in me, I tell the world and I tell you that it's about you. And so if you do a behavior that triggers anger in me, then if I'm in this codependent mode, then my language is going to be how you made me angry. Now, you showed up, you resonated my anger, but projection, I say, you made me angry. So I want you to be responsible for what's moving inside of me. When I shift into responsibility communication, I speak out, I step out of that projection language, I speak into responsibility language, and it's like, whoa, same circumstance, wow, all that stuff that just happened, and rather than you made me angry, that really triggered some anger in me that I realize is a thought disorder. I need to clean up. My God, I'm starting to look at this, and this looks just like what happened to me when I was 8 years old. Yeah, that's the power person dynamic. So the mind is a liar. It is the father of lies. Remember yesterday we talked about that your mind is a liar. It's the father of liars. There's no truth in it. None. Perception, constructs of the mind are always fake and false. Because they, even if they're accurate, they can be accurate. I mean, the truth might be they did it. And it matches your power person dynamic. But they may have done whatever it was. But the thing to get is the constructs of the mind, perception, are nothing but constructs of the mind. They're nothing but reflections of the past. Even if they're absolutely accurate about what happened in the world, they're still not what happened in the world. Because they're coming from carbon-based memory. And by definition, coming from carbon-based memory means the past. What does a carbon atom look like? 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. Recognize that number? 666. What is that? Mark of the Antichrist. So in responsibility communication, I speak from the mind of the Christ. The Christ in me, the mind of love in me, that experiences actuality as it is and lives in the world that the Creator created. Or carbon-based memory. And for everything that happens in your life, carbon-based memory, if you haven't resolved the thought disorders that underlie it, carbon-based memory is going to shoot up a picture about somebody else and how they're the cause of what's moving in you. When I shift into responsibility language, then I get to go, oh, here's my anger again. What's my anger about? Oh. Wow, got to breathe on that one. What's that anger about? Oh, I lost. Oh, I lost when I was a kid. Oh, I lost when that business deal. Oh, I lost when that company folded. Hundreds of hundreds of thousands of dollars of retirement funds just loss. And then living in projection, all that's resonated. What's the behavior? You lose. What's the language? It's the power person's voice speaking through us, but we think it's our own. Hope that makes sense for everybody. It may open the space for a conversation or two, because it's, while it's a very simple dynamic, at least I should say, for me, it's a very simple dynamic. It's a workshop I've been doing for 30 years, and as far as I know, the closest you'll find anything to do with this dynamic, understanding this, in the ancient scriptures, you hear Yeshua saying, or you hear the scriptures saying, the sins of the fathers will be passed into 3 and 4 generations. But that's about as far as it goes. And until one resolves the power person dynamic in themselves, when there's no stress or little stress, they'll do what they did, get along with the power person. Oh, Mr. Ms. Nice Guy. Stress starts to build. Do what they did to resist and survive with the power person. Oh, they go from being Mr. Ms. Nice Guy to being Mr. Ms. Snarky. If you're married to this person, you've been married for 5 years, and you haven't seen them in that built up stress base, all of a sudden you go, what just happened to you? I thought you were Mr. Ms. Nice Guy, and here you are being Mr. Ms. Snarky. What happened? Stress went up. Second level power person dynamic kicked in. And you go, but I don't even know who you are anymore. Yeah, that's right. And when that happens, one of the challenges in relationships, because it's through our relationships that we get healed, when that happens, it's not going to be long before there's going to be enough stress built in that relationship that the other person in the relationship, is, unless they're very conscious, is going to tend to start to play out the same power person dynamics. Now we have a battle of the matching bags of garbage, and until somebody, one or the other, both wake up and go, oh, I think I'll shift into responsibility communication, the whole game becomes the blame game. So after 5 years, you've been reliably functioning as Mr. Ms. Nice Guy. Now all of a sudden you're Mr. Snarky. I don't know if I want to be with Mr. Ms. Snarky. Oh, there's trouble in paradise. This is the phrase. We respect this stage in relationships very well in this culture. It's called the honeymoon is over. Now, really what it is the healing has begun. The next level of intensity of healing has begun, and it is the most profound opportunity through relationship to heal, because you've done enough work, you've done enough connectedness to actually start to go to those places and support each other in it. The carbon-based memory, when it holds this dynamic unresolved, kicks it in, fills awareness with it, and it literally, that construct from carbon-based memory, and again, if it's in carbon-based memory, it was put there sometime before now. If that means it is from the past. If something from the past is building your perception now. Again, even if the data is accurate about what's actually going on in the world, it's still from the past, so it's fake. It's a lie. Even if it's accurate. And what will tend to happen once you get the power person dynamic going to that next level in both parties, each one will tend to move farther and farther away from being there to generally see, fulfill, and support the goals of their partner, and then they'll move into that ultra stress place. If you want to watch the dynamic play out, watch the film The War of the Roses. There it is. And as far as I know, in history, no human being has had the opportunity to work this through as clearly and as crisply as understanding that dynamic. So again, when people become ultra-stressed, you listen to people, let's say, after they've had their divorce and all, and they talk about that person. It's kind of cute. watch AGT oftentimes at night. There's a young girl that got on with singing, and she had shared that, you know, she'd broken up in a relationship, and they asked her, well, you know, does that person know you're here? She said, no. Well, if they were here, what would you say to them? She kind of shyly said, well, I'd say, hi, hope you're doing okay. And then she turns her head a little bit and says, well, not really. And, you know, the way people, like, yesterday you cherished me, and today you think I'm, what's going on? What is that about? That's called the honeymoon is over, and it is the perfect place for people who come together through resonance, through matching bags of garbage, to heal themselves. But you can't keep doing projection communication and heal. You got to shift into responsibility communication. Oh, yes, my stress is up. Yes, I have goals active here. Yes, I have pain moving. Yes, this pain is mine. I've been here before, done this too many times. Like, I've worn out the rodeo shirt. So what are you going to do about it? Still keep talking about everybody else? And for me, again, for those who've done the codependence intensive, which is the one intensive that we have as a self-study, if you want to take that work on and take things to another level. But that's where the deepest opportunities to heal ourselves lie, but you can't do it while you're living in projection, and you can't do it without forgiveness. And forgiveness, again, if you're new to the show, has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's moving inside of me. If it's moving inside of me and I'm in pain, I want to be about removing what's moving in me. The whole, you know, carbon-based memory culture, which is basically what runs our whole culture, is into, oh yes, I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook because this is moving in me. That's a totally codependent idea. Never forgive anybody for anything, but forgive continuously. Got to get to the point where you forgive continuously. And the opportunities abound. This insight came for me this morning early, and because it was so profound for me, I just stayed with it and breathed into it. And it opened a whole new layer for me of healing in terms of my interaction with and the dynamics I still hold in me about my father, who was a pretty abusive guy. It's like just the whole, that for me, the excitement of this insight was the gift it gave to me of the next piece of my puzzle, of my work, of my healing. So there's no pretense here that anybody's finished. You know, we're all on the path. We're all in the same boat. But we can be here to support each other. And there's nothing like a little help from our friends. So I hope that fits.
You have two hands up.
Great. Let's say hello.
And the first one may be left over from Dr. Tim. Roan, did you raise your hand a second time? You're on the air.
Oh, you can hear me right now? Hey, you're loud and clear, Roan. Welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, okay. Thank you. That was from the previous show, but I, funny enough, did have something that I was going to ask about, perhaps later in the show.
Let's go for it.
Sure. So, in regards to, totally caught me off guard. In regards to the breathing exercises, I've heard, you know, this mentioned a number of times, and it's even been said it's extremely important part of the process.
Not a tool that we just hand to people. I don't teach about it. I don't write about it. It's something that we only do in person. It's such a powerful tool that. It's not something you just say, here, take this and go play with it. It's something that people need instruction and support in doing. It's a tool that ultimately is meant to be used for yourself, by yourself, but the initial phases we only do in person. And it's part of every intensive that we do. And we do a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop, which is happens to be this weekend. And so if it's something you want to participate in, we do have that workshop. It's Saturday morning and Sunday morning at 11 o'clock Eastern time both days. Saturday usually goes for 3 to 4 hours. Sunday usually goes for 1 hour to 2 hours. So if that's something that you want to participate in, you could let me know, and I'll drop Jeannie a note or text, and we'll arrange to get you registered if you want to do that. But it's a way of using the breath. You'll notice that anybody and everybody, when they're in some sort of what to them is unresolvable trauma they don't know the tools to handle, they hold their breath or they, you know, radically alter their breathing pattern. I know over the years I've had dozens and dozens and dozens of people who are saying, oh yeah, my mother used to tell me how I'd hold my breath till I turned blue. Yeah, that's a way of not wanting to feel, not wanting to deal with things. So if you notice somebody when trauma starts to move, or they perceive that trauma is approaching them, they'll tend to pretty radically alter their breathing pattern. And what that does, you know, in the ancient teachings, they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. That wasn't about a purple curtain in a church. Temple is this body-mind unit, and the veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. So you look at the average person, and they're holding their breath. They're locking it down, and that's the way they cut themselves off physiologically from feeling and dealing with what's moving in their minds. And so the veil has to be opened. It has to move. And when that happens, whatever's been in hiding then becomes accessible, and the breath processes through it. So it's the veil, again, is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. Three levels of mind, three levels of functioning of the firing of brain cells. Conscious, what you're aware of at the moment. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, what resonates in your mind? Something about the color of your car. So a moment ago, the color of your car, whatever information moved, is subconscious. I resonated. I put forward a frequency with my voice. Those brain cells fire. You become conscious of it. So conscious and subconscious are continuously changing places. But then if I ask the question, but what's the core of the issue that you're dealing with in your life that you're not sure you really want to work through? What is that core? And notice what happens with your breath. Whenever I ask that question, 99.9% of people report back to me that they hold their breath because the question resonates. What's in the unconscious and the holding of the breath keeps that information unconscious. If you listen to psychologists today, they'll tell us that somewhere between 80, 90, 95, some estimate as much as 98% of our quote-unquote thoughts are unconscious. And when you look at that, my offering is we're not designed to have an unconscious mind at all. And so when I properly apply the breath, I get to be able to start to deal with things that I and my bloodline have habitually held from ourselves, you know, held in hiding all of our lives. And so to open that barrier is to open the unconscious and be restored to our natural state, would be my take. The only other place, you know, if we do an online intensive, or if we do a Heartland intensive, which we don't have anything scheduled at this point, the codependency, interdependence, communication practicum, self-study has the instruction in the work of doing some breathing involved. And the only other place is, you know, I do a 3-day one-on-one personal intensive with folks, and I do that whole 3 days is focused in the breath. That's really the core tool of that personal intensive.
Okay. Well,
so there are the different ways to access it, but it's the key tool.
Okay. Okay, great. I would like more information on that, and it seems that the question comes at a timely moment, seeing that it's this weekend. So I would appreciate that being sent over to me, and I could review it and see how likely okay. that is for this time.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll be in touch with you after the show then.
All right. Thank you. I'll just cool. hold back and listen to the rest of the show.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye. Hey, Miss Jeannie, you've got another hand up?
I do, and it's 610. Miss Susan, welcome.
Hey, hi. Michael, that was
welcome,
powerful.
Lady.
Hi.
It boggled my mind this morning. I mean, I literally breathed.
Yeah.
I mean, really breathed for 2 hours this morning, big time.
For you.
In terms of what it opened for me and looking at. When I had that insight, and it's like, oh my God, that's just monumental. So. Fun time.
I don't have the right to ask, but since I'm working on a power person issue ongoing, I wondered if you could share some of the insights you did get about your dad, or is that just being too nosy?
No, that's not nosy at all. No, I've done a lot of work over the years on my dad. My dad was pretty violent and verbally and physically. I think I've shared with you before that from the stories I've been told of his upbringing in Glasgow, Scotland, as a street kid there, I had a whole other level of insight into what he'd been through when I watched the movie The Streets of New York.
Wow.
And so I've resolved a lot of that, processed through a lot of that, and I've been pretty much in a space of peace with him. And that insight today, for me, led me to a place where, for the first time, and this is what I was doing as I was breathing, I could hold and embrace my father as I would my granddaughter. And just
wow.
That was kind of it was just to hold him was the end result of that process. And it was interesting. Actually, we had an appointment to go out this morning, and I was breathing away, and Jeannie came in and told me about the appointment. And just like seconds before she came in and touched me and said, Michael, you've got a half an hour, get ready to go. I had just gone through that with holding my dad, just like, you know, like 2,000% everything is A-okay, Dad, kind of thing. And just like maybe 10 seconds before Jeannie touched me and alerted me to that, a voice said, what if it's a boy? And it was like I was getting ready to go into a whole new level of process around something, and I don't have a clue what that meant.
Wow.
But that's what, just as she alerted me, it was getting time to go, I was in a still point, and it was like, somebody said, what if it's a boy? Now, I don't know if that was around my own birth, if somebody said that, or was a memory. I don't know. I have no idea. I, like, you know, came right out of it, and so I'll be doing more breathing on it when I have the space, and if something shows up, I'll certainly share it. But it was just a whisper that had just gone by. It was just, what if it's a boy?
God,
and then she alerted me.
What if it's a boy? Like, that might be bad, or you were expecting a girl? Somebody was expecting a girl?
I don't know. I have no, there was no energy or emotion to it. There was no insight. You know, was it said about me being born? Was, you know, I have no idea. There was no, like, you know, to be announced. Because that was as far as I got with it. And it was, I had to, you know, get up and get moving. But I'll be doing some more breathing around it. But it was just a really tender space. And
I wanted to ask
you, so the work goes on.
the man you were working with, were you working with him? And, or I missed his relationship to you. You were reporting on this man in the 60s who said you lose. Okay. Well, you worked, so you were working with him.
Yeah. With someone I'd been working with, and this was a communication he provided to someone as a result of what I would deem to be a meaningless, based in fantasy argument going on.
Yeah.
But
you know,
the stress obviously was pretty high because basically he just said, like, I'm cutting this relationship off. And it was a relationship that, you know, as I understood it, was pretty valuable to him. But it was just like, I'm out of here. You lose. And it was just like, when it was recent processing in our private session that he had shared that you know, these losses throughout his whole life, that was like one of the, that was his, why is this happening to me again? And then to hear him report this, you lose, was just like, there it is. That's the whole.
There it is. Are you going to get to work with him more? I mean, I hear this.
Well,
we'll see
what unfolds.
Yeah. Well, the connection you made between codependency and power person, you know, you've probably said it a gazillion times, but sometimes, you know, when you say something, it goes in at a different angle.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a whole new level of insight for me. The catch, and the key one was, I now, you know, the person who's playing out of the power person dynamic, the unconscious thinking is, I've now displaced God and I get to be God. I get to deliver the blow that was delivered to me. And, you know, and of course the insanity of that is, who am I delivering the energetic blow to but to myself? I get the original.
Absolutely.
They get the carbon copy. So it was just, but watching how the non-being mind works in, you know, if it's vengeance, I get to take vengeance, then I get to be God. It's like, oh my God, talk about twisted.
Oh man, I know, the seduction of that moment of triumph is so, well, it's seductive, and it's tragic.
Pseudo-triumph, you say?
What? Yeah.
Pseudo-triumph, you say?
Yeah, I didn't say pseudo, but I meant it. I mean the so-called triumph, the feeling of triumph there is so tragic.
It's like I'm now the one with the powers. Wow, that was, and that's a good word for it, seductive.
Oh man.
That's exactly what it is.
Well,
and you know, going back to a default conversation that comes up often on the show, I always go back to those disciples that were with Yeshua when he told them what they needed to do, and they say, too hard a saying, and they leave, you know, too hard a saying, who can understand? And until you got the brain cells for that, I mean, I've been teaching that workshop for 30 years, and I finally had the brain cells to go, oh, there it is, that's it. So I can relate to them saying, too hard a saying, who can understand it? And they leave, you know, they leave and they never come back. You know, somebody says, no, you can't do that vengeance stuff. You can destroy yourself. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This is my moment of triumph. What do you mean I can't do it? I'm damn sure I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And it leads to, it's a whole other level of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Self-destruction.
And you're
energetically self-destruction.
Right. You're watching the self-destruction there.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's tragic. Must be very hard to see.
Yeah. And another piece of the puzzle to me that fits as we're talking about this now is, and people play this game of, oh, I have to be, you know, out of a false understanding of, oh, I have to be good to please God. No, I have to be good in order not to destroy myself. Good being, be on the path where I only serve up energies that are based in love rather than those based in hostility or fear, because anything I served up based
and over and over.
It ties in, and I say this just to kind of explore it a little further, in the church, where confession is a requirement, a part of the religious ritual and belief, there are, at the end of quote-unquote confession, there is what's called the act of contrition. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm sorry, and it's, there's what they call the perfect and the imperfect act of contrition. The perfect one is, I'm sorry for having done this simply because I broke my relationship with you, Creator. That's the perfect act of contrition. But then they're allowed the imperfect act of contrition. And the imperfect act of contrition is, I'm sorry because if I don't be sorry for this, I'm going to hell. So it's fear.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting how they've tried to handle a dynamic like that, because who understands it? Who knows what to do with it? So they allowed, right. You know, or they desired, they instructed, do the perfect one. But if you can't quite get to being the perfect one, you still got that rage, you still want to punch that guy in the nose, then do the imperfect one. I'm sorry for wanting to punch him in the nose because I'm afraid I'm going to go to hell. Yeah. And that, you know, in a pinch, that'll get you by.
Oh, God.
Obviously, energetically isn't going to do it.
Right.
So it takes so much out of the realm of belief and just makes it like, oh, yeah, there's a really good reason for doing this. Although they made up one of, well, you have to do it because we got this big dude that created a fiery place that we're going to send you to if you don't do it.
Right.
It's like, none of that fantasy stuff is necessary, that threat stuff. Just understand the dynamics behind it and clean up your mind. So what does that move for you, young lady?
Well, a lot, Michael. I'm thinking about my grandson, Jacob, who is beyond reach now with his rage and invective toward the very people who care about him so much. He's gone way beyond even his new father, his stepfather, who remained close to him when everybody else had to block him because of his cruelty toward them.
You
saw some of that. And by the way, Michael, he wrote me, he's blocked, but somehow a voicemail message came through and he said, will you get this friend of yours to stop talking to me? You're triangulating and doing it. I have no, referred to her as a girl, a woman. How dare you triangulate?
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, go ahead.
That was me. In our communications, he referred to me as a girl, or actually as a bitch.
Oh, wow.
Like,
I thought,
well,
that must be what it was.
And he had, say again?
I thought that must be the person he was referring to was you, because I haven't spoken to anybody but him. You know, as bad-mouthing him, and he, anyway.
He was so, he knew so much about me. I mean, he had a litany of all the things he knew about me, you know, how I was white and I was rich and I grew up rich and I was a bitch. It's like, wow, the projection is pretty strong here, young man.
It is. But, he does that to my son. He won't speak to my son. He has my son on leave for PTSD with his work. And Jacob was telling him, you know, months ago now, you're a spoiled, white, rich, privileged, lazy son of a gun. I mean, he was letting him have it. And Jonathan's, my God, if anybody, he really didn't know how to take care of himself. That's why he's in the state he's in now. He needs the tools to get mad. Of course, that's a whole other tangent. But Jake is doing this, doing this projection, all of it. And it is all
I got that whole story.
You did. Oh. And
yep. But and he thinks I'm a female. Boot.
Oh, wow. And his power person is his father, but he is acting worse than his father. And there's an element of self-preservation that his father had. His father could apologize. Of course, it didn't last. You'd get a second round, third round, or fourth. I learned not to get very near that man because his apologies were so sincere and loving and sweet. And I would think, oh my God, you know, he really gets it. And then there was it was Jekyll and Hyde, but Jacob doesn't have the apology part at all. It's all ugly. And it's just mind-blowing.
Well, that's the three levels of power person dynamic. You know, mm-hmm. What do? I'm Mr. Nice Guy in my normal persona. Stress starts to build. Mm-hmm. Whatever I did to resist and survive with my power person, now I attack. That's persona. The Greek word persona is a mask, and it's a mask that is generated out of carbon-based memory, and it's mm-hmm. we think we are, and it sounds like probably the level of abuse that Jacob took on leaves him in a pretty painful place continuously.
It does.
And then when you add alcohol and drugs, that exacerbates mm-hmm. that whole thing. And of course, the alcohol and drugs are just trying to Hyde is trying to anesthetize his pain.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, so of
and
course.
It's unfortunate that it only cracks when it cracks. That whole personality structure cracks under, you know, the stress of, you know, being at the bottom of the barrel, unfortunately.
I think that's in the near future. Because when he leaves college, he's on his own and he has no resources. He has plenty of resources to use them, but he thinks we're supposed to provide those. And if we don't, that's the bottom he's going to reach. And I hope he really reaches it without jumping off a cliff.
Yeah, I'll join you in that, holding him in safety. Yeah, holding him in safety.
Well,
I don't envy kids coming up in today's world.
No, I don't either, because a lot of them really do need assistance. It's too hard when they get out of school to make their way in any way that's not going to just exhaust them with trivia, making money just to pay rent. So I hope the adults who are around can help. In this case, we want to. And we can't, not without just a total rescue. But you
totally
that
enabling.
Yeah, there's no responsibility being taken on that side at all. So anyway, I keep coming back to that. My apologies. You know what I keep thinking is I am doing these retraining of the neuro pathways of the brain program. I'm doing it. To accompany Kim Bingham, who's having such, it's his language, he's doing it, and I'm watching a transformation, and so I'm thinking, well, I've been doing that all along, I use the tools, but the thing is about this, it is extremely repetitive, and I've been listening to your talk, so I hear a lot of repetition, that's how it gets in, and,
yes,
but this is programmed down to the nth. You step on certain plaques you write for yourself on the floor, and you say certain prescribed things, and to me it seems like, oh my God, like going to AA and hearing them say, hi, my name is Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Sue! You know,
it sounds like a a mechanical way of involving your body in changing your regulatory speech.
Absolutely.
It sounds like it's dealing with regulatory speech, and so you're using mechanical reinforcement, which is, you know, powerful because it moves the energy deeper into tissue. So that makes sense. Tim's finding some of it's working.
I do readjust some of the wording of it because it's not responsible communication.
Right.
And I won't go into all that, but learning what I have from what you teach about that, I've changed some of the language to be more suitable, so more positive and reinforcing the positive, not repeating the negative.
Right.
But it's a brilliant program. I'm only 2 days into it. Only 2 days. So I'm really too soon to talk about it. But all I can say
I'll look forward to hearing about it as it unfolds.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you're very good about that. Because you're teaching your tools. You don't need to hear about
One of the things I've found is that everybody who's got any kind of success going in working with shifting the mind or the body, they're doing something that works, and because it's different, everything, you know, when we see the whole, I'm open to every piece of the puzzle. Like I've shared before that one of the things that, qualified anything that I had learned to become part of the energy field work that we teach in our intensives, it was something that would take people into a still point, because that still point is such a key. And so, you know, I'm my ear is always to the ground for something, anything else that fits and moves, because it's every human being has a different persona, a different way of being able to open. And if somebody's discovered a way to open and bring healing, I want to know about it.
Oh, that's nice.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
All right.
On that insight you had and the way you reported it. It's a keeper.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet for me. It was really, it was a whole new level of understanding with my relationship with my dad and being able to embrace him in a new way, a new level that I had not been able to do previously, you know, in terms of my
That's
own personal
so
process with my dad. So it's pretty sweet.
That is wonderful. It gives people hope, me included, because, you know,
yay,
I can break with my mother, but embracing her, that hasn't happened. Appreciation,
well, the distinct difference, which I had never been able to do before this morning, was I could embrace him as deeply, as sweetly as I do Ari Rain. So
that
tells
so
the level of meaning
amazing
that it took it to for me. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So. All right, well, we're down to the last minute, so I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and we join you in it. Bless